Three quotes and three questions.
Three quotes and three questions. Make up a colorful story about an unscrupulous masseuse who was arrested for armed robbery.
Okay, you want to start with that one? Introduce yourself. I'm Chief Bosco, the
Metro Police. Okay, are we recording?
Yeah.
Hello. I am Chief Richard Bosco of the City of Latrobe Police Department. Today I'd like to tell you a story about an unscrupulous masseuse. He worked in the city, but we had to arrest him for armed robbery.
I'd like to find out what happened to that unscrupulous masseuse who was arrested for armed robbery. Colorful Living Tip of the Day number 95. Tell friends you figured out a surefire way to become famous. Teach a dog how to sing, bark, I want you to want me. Congratulations, you've taught an old dog cheap trick. Jeff and I both used to work for the old TR, the Tribune Review. Today we see each other several days a week at the old TL. That's the Tin Lizzie. But Jeff always makes a big deal about enjoying the podcast, and I appreciate that, so today we give a warm howdy to Jeff Katarski. Thanks for your enthusiasm. See, that's all you have to do to get mentioned on this podcast. Be kind, be encouraging, and buy me a beer every so often. Someday I'll make a list of all the people who make donations to support the podcast. This will include Matt S., Michael B., Howard W., Joe Z., Joyce P., and Bob K., whose donation came through just as I was playing Tom Petty, When the Time Comes. So you'll forgive me if I was momentarily felt like I was back in Athens and he'd just found a $20 bill stuck in the Court Street cobblestones. Those cobblestones are on the roads and they're in my blood. I'm thinking of background music for the podcast because it would make it more like a party, one where I did all the talking. You know, my kind of party. But then I might start commenting on the music and we'd lose the essence of what this is all about, and that is keeping it colorful right here in the Laurel Highlands. And today that means why everyone ought to turn the deaths of elderly old ladies into epic adventures gone awry. If we all become vegan, what are we going to do with all the cows? Lastly, we'll talk about circus elephant poop shovelers and, speaking of crappy things, the day billionaire Jeff Bezos sent me a check for 42 cents. I'm Chris Rodell, and this is the Use All the Crayons podcast. Before we go on, I have to say, does anyone notice the crispness of the bell? I found an old bell I used to use at the porch when we'd have like a diner set up for the kids. No more fumbling. I put a moratorium on boring dinner deaths the other night after yet another old neighbor lady passed away in her sleep. This was from 2007, 2009 or so. It's not that I'm opposed to morbid death talk at dinner. On the contrary, I've always considered myself a death connoisseur. I enjoy lively talks about death and dying. As a young newspaper reporter, I was daily immersed in the grisly ends of many hapless strangers. I've seen with my own eyes the mangled bodies of gunshot victims, suicide sidewalk splatters, and hapless casualties of no-win confrontations with runaway trucks. Their scarred corpses haunt my dreams. I wonder about the pain, the fateful recognition that death was imminent, and I invariably put myself in their doomed shoes, hands raised in futile defense the instant before the pin hits the shell. It's not death I mind, it's boredom. And our daughter Josie, then 7, shares those impulses. So when Val said the other night about the neighbor lady dying in her sleep, Josie was naturally curious. How did she die? What happened? She was old, Val said. She died in her sleep, very peaceful. It was maybe the 8th old lady who died in her sleep that year. If you're looking for a tidy, peaceful death, become an old lady in my neighborhood and just bide your time. I could sense Josie was disappointed. I set my fork down and wiped my mouth with my napkin. But I'm tired of all these old ladies dying in their sleep. The next time some old lady passes away, you make damn sure you have a good story to tell us. It's not going to make her any less dead if she was eaten by a bear or struck by lightning, and we'll all enjoy our dinners a little bit more. Conversations about Mrs. Miller, who was struck by a meteor when she was gardening, Mrs. Peterson, who died heroically trying to save her kidnapped husband from Colombian rebels, and poor old Mrs. Benson, who was killed trying to retrieve her wedding ring from a cranky wood chipper. I have absolutely no fear of death, as long as it doesn't have to hurt. I probably spend a lot of time thinking about dying because I spend so much time thinking about living. I really enjoy my life, and I know it's so finite. We're all born the same way, but death's a real crapshoot. Even mean, rich people can die grisly, untimely deaths. And we all feel a little bit better about ourselves when something like that happens. It's one of the most fair things about this confoundingly unfair life. Ideally, I'd like to live to be about 90, stumble drunk out of a friendly tavern and get hit by a bus. I want the bus to be traveling so fast that bystanders will swear they saw my soul shoot out of my body, bound straight for heaven, and that my soul wasn't wearing any pants. But I'm guessing it's most likely to be happening in a movie theater where I'll be gunned down by some rude yapping kids who don't feel like being shushed by an old man who feels it's his duty to police the audience so everyone can hear the witty dialogue animating what I guess you would call Shrek 19. No matter what happens, I've started a family tradition that when I go, it'll be something that'll entertain my darling daughters. Val, kids, I've got some bad news. Your father was killed today. He was struck by a meteor while fighting Colombian rebels with a wood chipper. His body fell off the mountain he was climbing and landed in shark-infested waters just as a nearby volcanic island erupted. Sure, some of that might hurt, but it ought to give me real bragging rights when I run into all those old neighbor ladies who yawn, died in their sleep.
Sure. Are there any advantages to being the chief of police in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood?
There is a very succinct advantage to being the chief of police in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. There is an understanding of kindness that comes with being a part of the neighborhood. I have the privilege of pushing out all of my correspondence, and I get to begin it with a privilege of calling them my neighbors.
Yeah. What do people say when they introduce yourself as the chief of police of Latrobe?
I often, when I'm traveling, and I travel extensively, I often introduce myself to people as the chief of police of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And I ask them, I always predicate the question with, do you know who Mr. Rogers is?
Yeah.
And everybody, they're worldwide, majority of people know who Mr. Rogers is.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you have the absolute privilege of meeting the chief of police of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And they go, you're kidding. I said, no, I am Chief Richard Bosco, the chief of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Colorful living tip of the day, number 100. Inform friends you'd like to see a Broadway musical about a demonic woman who works at an evil candle factory. Say it should be called Wicked. Wicked. Get it? Wicked. I'm alarmed by trends showing a steady increase in vegetarians because I wonder what we're going to do with all the cows once we've all stopped eating meat. And that's going to be a real problem because they'd make terrible zoo exhibits. They're not entertaining like monkeys. They're not exotic like gorillas. You can't race them, and although I've never attempted it, I imagine trying to ride one would be like spending a lot of time sitting on a stalled school bus. When you think about it, the only thing a cow is really good at is devoting its every waking moment to trying to make itself tastier for people like me who enjoy a good steak every once in a while. But while cows are thriving, it seems we meat eaters are being systematically culled from the herd. A recent study from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention says one in 200 teens now identifies themselves as vegetarians. It's a lifestyle I admire, but I won't succumb to, which is about how I feel about people who get and go to work every day. I eat lots of delicious salads, gorge on seafood, and try not to eat too much red meat. But sometimes nothing satisfies like a big, juicy steak or cheeseburger. I'm a Weber grill man, and because I love the ritual involved in cooking the meals, I think it dishonors a really good steak to just slap it on a frying pan or singe it in a broiler. In high summer, Weber men like me devote nearly a full hour of beer-sipping preparation to the 8 or so minutes it takes to cook a good steak. When it's done to medium rare, I summon the family out on the porch. We say a little grace thanking God for the food and always ask that he get some grub for the homeless and those without. We don't get all political and specify that he give them healthy things like broccoli or carrots. Just we pray fill up their bellies. I wondered if I should say a little prayer for the cow that gave its life for us to eat it. But I never do and I won't until someone persuades me we're all praying to a cow god. One of my favorite philosophical bumper stickers reads, if God had intended man to be vegetarians, then why did he make animals out of meat? It's a good question. I consider myself somewhat of an expert on cows because I frequently travel by train from my western Pennsylvania home through miles of rich farmland to New York City. If you've never taken Amtrak, you need to understand that there are often hour-long episodes where the locomotive is perfectly still. Sometimes they explain why, often not. During these times of tedium, I read, type on my laptop, chat with my seatmate, doodle on a notebook, and wonder what kind of insanity makes me want to travel by train instead of airplane, bus, or pack mule, all forms of travel which must be speedier than Amtrak. And more often than not, I'm stuck staring at the ample backside of a cow. I contemplate its existence. What must it be like to be a cow? It seems perfectly boring. They just stand there chewing the grass. But who am I to judge? Sometimes the cows look up at me and my fellow passengers, and they must think our Amtrak existence is perfectly boring. I'm always fascinated by stories that relate how cow flatulence is among the leading contributors of methane gas that's wreaking havoc on the ozone layer. Or is it wreaking havoc? A little wordplay there. Anyway, one recent study says each cow emits 200 to 400 quarts of methane gas per day. Per day! Or 50 million metric tons per year. Times are tough, but I hope I never get the opportunity to put cow fart counter on my resume. Thus, it's not a stretch to say meat eaters are on the front line of helping to limit the amount of deadly flatulence in the air, at least those of us who don't include a big plate of beans on the side. And what would happen to all the cows if we stopped eating them? The farmers who tend them would let them go free. They'd roam the countryside. They'd wind up clogging the highways and parks. We'd be overrun with cows. So it's probably all for the greater good that the natural order is maintained. The last thing any of us needs to do is to have a big stupid animal lazing around the property doing nothing but polluting the atmosphere with those big piles of outrageous bullcrap. That's my job.
Go on in Latrobe, the Steeler Camp and Banana Split Festival. Which one do you look forward to the most?
Oh, wow. Well, being an ice cream aficionado, the Banana Split Festival is absolutely my favorite. But as far as the gathering of people, the Fred Rogers Day, the Mr. Rogers Day's event there, it brings an amazing amount of people for one perspective. But then the Steeler Camp, on the other hand,
yeah,
draws people from all over the United States. In fact, last summer I met a couple from Ireland.
No kidding.
That flew in just for Steeler training camp, and they spent the day in the city of Latrobe.
That's great.
The circus. This is from back in 2016 when they still had elephants. The elephants are no longer part of the Ringling Brothers Circus. They were a big part of the circus. Here's what we wrote about in 2016. My daughters and I were witness to the only group of noble workers who were destined to go unpandered to by both presidential candidates. I'm talking about elephant poop shovelers. We saw them in action during the Sunday matinee at the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus here in Pittsburgh. I adore the circus. It truly is the greatest show on earth. I do not recall it. We took our daughters there 2 years ago, and it's become a staple. Every 2 minutes, there's another colorful spectacle that had my six-year-old getting all bug-eyed and going, "Wow, it's magic." During the three-hour, fully charged show, we saw feats of strength, high-wire daredevils, men on 20-foot stilts, Olympic-worthy acrobats, and saw a giant crossbow launch a human fuse from one end of the arena to the other at 65 miles an hour while on fire. It's incredible that these men and women who risk their lives and limbs should be upstaged by poop scoopers is bound to chagrin anyone who hopes life is fair. But animals are a big part of the circus, and I understand that troubles some animal lovers. They think these magnificent beasts should be free to roam the wilderness as nature intended. I agree, but elephant habitat is rapidly declining, and I can't think that there's some suburban Nairobi farmer who for years prayed for the day when he wouldn't have to stop worrying about those damned elephants stomping through the bean patch 2 days before harvest. So elephants are here, and where animal rights groups are ready to pounce at any hint of mistreatment. We can only hope they are lavished with attention and care. We move on. They are highly entertaining. They've been trained to dance, to spin on pedestals, rear back on their hind legs. It's delightful to see anything standing 12 feet and weighing 7 tons appear so nimble. I used to get the same reaction watching 340-pound Pittsburgh Steeler nose tackle Casey Hampton try to run 10 yards. The elephants, I learned, require 300 pounds of foliage every day. Logically, the output is just as considerable, and an elephant's going to go when and where an elephant's got to go. That means right there during the performance, something Hampton, to his credit, never did. It's a sight to behold. This one elephant was right in the middle of the routine when he rolled over with his three mates. Then more than 8,000 people gasped. For a moment, they were constructing an elaborate Greek temple, column by column. It looked like one of those massive Play-Doh mold formers you squeeze to make log and star shapes. We decided right there to call that elephant Dumpo. As amazing as that was, what happened next was even more incredible. A squad of 5 or 6 black-clad poop scoopers seemed to rappel from the rafters. They vanquished the pile in seconds. Their coordination and efficiency was breathtaking. It was like watching SEAL Team 6 in action. But Dumpo wasn't done. Still maintaining his role in the routine, he rose to all fours. By now, every eye in the arena was glued to the elephant's ass and as it resumed its mighty pucker. None of us would ever forget what happened next. This stout woman, maybe 5'6", raced right beneath the maw and raised her shovel to a 45-degree angle from the elephant's manhole-sized anus to bare her outstretched arms. It was like heroically watching her dash to just below the Niagara Falls right before someone was about to flip the on switch. Anyone with an appreciation of math and gravity trembled for the pending embarrassment. I said a small, fast prayer that experience had taught her to breathe through her nose. Our fears were misplaced. This gal knew exactly what she was doing. She deftly snagged what must have been 25 pounds of dung and held it steady until the animal relaxed. It was the greatest show on earth. As she dashed away, the whole crowd cheered. I think the elephant thought we were cheering for him because I swear I saw him smile. We filed out of the arena exhausted. There's just so much that a great circus has to offer. It left us joyfully fatigued. You could say we were all pooped out. So a strong reaction, so I'll repeat it here for you folks. Estimates are that Amazon founder Jeff Bezos is worth $219.4 billion. That's 219-400-000-000. That's a lot of zeros. Or is he? Because on the day I read that, my bank statement showed a direct deposit of 42 cents from Amazon. Thank you, Jeff! That's 42 cents. What diabolical formula is used to decide a $16 book is worth just 42 cents to the person who wrote it? It takes solace in knowing that at this moment, thanks to me, Bezos is worth just 219,399,999.58. This Black Friday, I urge you to buy my books from any one of the small businesses, local businesses, who for years have supported my work. Or if you want to support a big business that knows how to treat local contributors, stop in at the Barnes & Noble Saturday, November 30th from 1 to 3 p.m. I'll be there. Or by golly, get in touch with me. I'll not only sell you signed books, I'll ride around in your car and read them out loud to you.
I think that we've established such a strong foothold in that level of understanding who Mr. Rogers and Arnie Palmer were. And as soon as I announce myself and where I'm from, the city of Latrobe, people automatically ask one of two questions about Mr. Rogers or Mr. Palmer. You know, it's a great legacy. And now the banana split, pro football, and some other things, they weren't familiar that it's tied to the city. But I think that the legacy of Mr. Rogers and Mr. Palmer are world-renowned for the city of Latrobe.
And it's an all benefit.
It's an all benefit.
Okay, thank you.
And the nice thing about it is people always have a smile on their face when they mention either one of those two names.
Yeah.
I've never met, I don't recall meeting anyone that didn't smile automatically at the name of Mr. Fred Rogers.
Yeah.
And the same with Arnold Palmer. I have, to this day, you know, in this point of my career, 40 years on plus, I've never heard anybody say anything degrading toward Mr. Rogers or Mr. Palmer. And they're always held in the highest of esteem, and that's exactly where I hold them.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and it's a privilege to work in this neighborhood.
Yeah. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate how ambitious tailors who work exclusively on three-piece suits have vested interests. Vested interest? All right, first person to guess which landmark album this next tune is from gets a free signed copy of Use All the Crayons. Ready? Here you go. Never to see Ellie, never to see Ellie, never to see Ellie.
John Jamison, retired sheep farmer, Crabtree, Pennsylvania. Tip of the day is, learn the fine art of knowing precisely when to quit.
Thank you.
Yes.